Welcome back to the Razzball Prospect Podcast. I'm Michael Halpern, here with Ralph Lifshitz. We're continuing the Fantasy Top 100. We did 1 through 20 last week, 10, 11 days ago maybe, not quite last week. 21 through 50 this week. We're not going to go through every name, but we'll figure it out. And what's up, Ralph? It's right before World Series Game 7, or kind of during it. So our dedication is strong. Are you DVRing? What's your plan?
Yes, I set up the DVR, I turned on the TV, I saw, you know, right as Smoltzy and Hair Plug Joe Buck were doing their pregame analysis, and I hadn't quite yet muted the television. I don't know if anyone saw this on Twitter. I actually mute the TV most of the time when I watch sporting events because I can't stand announcers.
Do you go music in the background, or you just do?
In college or when I'm at my friend's house, we often will do music in the background. But if I'm at home, no, I'll usually just have like the game on the screen, especially with baseball, and then I'll have the MLB app, and I'll that way I can look at what the pitch was, because sometimes like a guy throws a curve and a slider, and I wonder what the machine picks up versus what I thought it was.
So you're saying no sound? You just listen to no? You're just silent?
Yeah, unless there's like an interesting stat or something. And there's certain, like, I would listen to Dodgers games. I actually don't mind the Red Sox with Eck now so much. I really didn't like Remy. That's what it started from. I'm such an outcast when it comes to like being from Boston and watching baseball. I despise Jerry Remy as an announcer. He annoys the crap out of me, and like if you watch every game and you're just like half awake while you're watching these Red Sox games, you know what he's going to say. You know his routines. Like we would start quoting him, and it got so annoying that we shut it off. So yeah, I watch games on mute. So I DVR'd the game. I'm ready to go. It's 8:42, so the game started probably about 20 minutes ago. But it doesn't matter to us because we want to get the information out to the people. Luckily, there won't be anything, hopefully, World Series relevant
about this. Something major will have happened. We won't be covering any of it. You know, everyone's going to wake up with World Series on the mind in our 21 through 50 drops, you know, but whatever.
Yeah, right? Like Walker Buehler, we're going to talk about Walker Buehler or something. He's going to end up in the rotation because Yu Darvish blows his arm out, or like Clayton Kershaw comes in and like, you know, screws up his back again.
Oh, you're even saying relevant to what we're talking about. No, that's
relevant
a long
to
shot.
What we're talking about. Yeah, I don't care. I'm not going to be dropping like relevant World Series gems on these people that live in the future. I mean, that's crazy.
Have you been watching the pregame show? Because the A-Rod, Ortiz, Keith Fernandez, they've been killing it. You know, Frank Thomas kind of gets left out on the end there, but I've been loving the – I know I'm not the only one. People are writing about it, but they're awesome. Do you watch that? Because that's like – that's one of the most fun parts of the World Series for me.
Yeah, you're further like hammering home my very unpopular opinions in my hometown and surrounding area. And that is – I love A-Rod. He's like the player that I've liked the most post-playing career. Like I've never seen such a 180 on a player. Like he's awesome. He is awesome. I love listening to him in the pregame. Ortiz is just goofy. Like I think he adds that flair. He kind of says the same thing all the time.
He has like a relaxing. Everyone's like relaxing.
Yeah, but I
think
you
know people loosen up.
Well, they want to model it after like a bunch of guys talking sports.
Of course.
They're
modeling it after the TNT show with Barkley and Kenny Smith. I mean,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that he kind of adds that, not that he's going to say anything outrageous, but he kind of adds that like Barkley thing, but it's a little cleaner and more fun. And his image obviously is a little different and whatever. But, and then Hernandez is always great. I mean, I Mets games are ones that I will keep the sound on. They're a team that I don't totally hate.
Are you often watching Mets games?
Yeah, I'll put him at games. Well, I have the ticket, so I actually have to swap back onto my cable if I want to watch a Red Sox game.
I got you.
Where I can watch any of the other games, especially if it's a full night where there's 14 other games besides the Red Sox. I can watch any of those games without any restriction, and I can bounce from one game to the next or watch multiple games on the screen at the same time. So, there's so many benefits. I watch more Dodgers games than anything else. I'm kind of a secret Dodgers fan.
Yeah, well, I love watching the Dodgers too. That used to be kind of like my West Coast team. I'd watch Yankees at 7, watch Dodgers at 10. They're a great team. They're packed with talent. This was a couple years ago. Yeah. I didn't get the package this year. Just the minor league package.
My grandmother, God rest her soul, she died a year ago. She was 100 years old. She was from Brooklyn, born and raised in Brooklyn. She was a Dodgers fan. She's the only member of my family that's a baseball fan. My mother, my father, my sister hate baseball. My other grandmother's Portuguese and Brazilian. She knows soccer. She doesn't care about baseball at all. So it was me and Grandma Betty who would watch baseball games. She followed the Red Sox out here, obviously, because it was difficult to follow the Dodgers once they moved to LA. And this is pre-streaming and all that stuff, you know. 70s, 80s, that whole thing. But she would always buy me Dodgers swag. So I have several pictures of me rocking Dodgers hats, probably more so than any Red Sox gear, as funny as that sounds.
Nice, nice. Your dad grew up in Brooklyn too, right?
No. My father is from Fall River, Massachusetts. Fall Reeve. Same as Chris Heron. A great 30 for 30.
Nice, nice. And my dad grew up in Brooklyn.
No, my grandmother moved out of Brooklyn in like 1948, 49, moved to Fall River, Massachusetts. Both my parents grew up in Massachusetts.
Nice, nice. All right. Ready for some prospects? Off World Series, off grandma?
Yeah, we're going to talk a little background on who we are. I just, want to tell you about my family for no reason.
I asked. No, I'm always
sharing. We're in the trust tree. We're sharing right
now.
Yeah.
My mom's actually like the biggest Yankee fan in the family. She's a fanatic. It's hard. Whenever I watch a game with her, it's rough because she's so intense. It's actually pretty crazy. And she,
really?
Yeah, she's not really into any other sports. She just loves the Yankees. She like DVRs the pregame, the postgame. She's a humongous Yankee fan. It's kind of nuts. I don't remember her being this big of a fan when I was like growing up. Something clicked. I don't know what it was.
My dad is Pats and Bruins and Chelsea. He follows soccer. He could care less about basketball. And he would take me to Red Sox games, but we never really watched a ton of Red Sox games. And like he'll only talk about the Red Sox if they're really good. Like he talked to me about the World Series today. He was like, "Hey, so when's game 7? The game was pretty good the other night." You know.
We'll have to start doing bringing our parents on and going. I was gonna say bring your grandma on, but rest in peace. But all right, let's move on. Grandma's listening from up above. All right, let's start into our rankings. Let's talk about Anthony Alford at the top because I feel like Alford could be elite. I really do, and he's number 23 for you. He's right outside my top 20. I don't think I'm gonna list every exact number. We're gonna kind of talk about just certain guys and highlight stuff, but all right, Anthony Alford right off the top. Once again, he hits the ball very hard. He's got the football background, extremely athletic, extremely strong. The power numbers aren't there right now, but I'm thinking if I own Alford, I'm really treating him kind of as an elite power speed guy who knows how to hit too, even though he's still raw. It's just someone I'm not looking to get rid of. So he's right outside both of our top 20s. But quite honestly, I think he's right in that, mid-teen mix of these guys where I'm not really giving them up. They could be beasts. Are you as optimistic as as I am and how good he could be?
Yeah, I think that obviously the general question with him is power and how much is there. And, just to give a background, sort of repeat what you said, piggyback on it. Great contact guy. I mean, he hit 299 this year. Mostly in double A, 390 on base percentage. He gets on base. The problem was the 406 slug. He doesn't have the power there yet. Now, when I look at a guy like that who's super athletic, as you said, he has the tools, he has the body. He hasn't been long for baseball full time. Obviously, he got a late start. He's got the speed already, good bat to ball skills, good approach. So he has an understanding at the plate. I mean, this guy isn't a hacker by any means. He's also, during his slumps, going to get on base and be able to steal some bases, you know, even when, you know, he's not putting the bat in the ball. I think it brings up an interesting conversation when it comes to breaking down prospects in the current environment and with these balls that just, quite honestly, I don't think anyone's going to have an issue with this. Juiced. I mean, they're totally juiced. They seem like they're even more juiced in the World Series. Why would we think this guy couldn't come up and hit 20 homers? And now, okay, 20 homers isn't that valuable. But if you have a guy who can hit 280 to 300, get on base, potentially hit at the top of the lineup and score a whole ton of runs, even if he's in a bad lineup, he could probably score 85-plus runs just with the kind of ability he has. You know, and he's going to steal bases. That guy could be an absolute stud. You know, his baseline is so much higher because of all those other skills that are in need in terms of batting average, runs, and then obviously steals, which is about as scarce as it could be. So I don't see why he wouldn't hit. I think he could hit 20 next year. I know that sounds insane, but why not? I mean, it seems like everybody's coming up and hitting 20 at this point, especially if they get enough at-bats.
Yeah, it doesn't sound insane to me. I think his raw power is beyond 20. He could be like a 30-15. I mean, if we're talking pure ceiling, you know, a 30-20 sure. guy, obviously that's crazy. But, yeah, no, he could – I don't know if he'll get there next year to the 30 number, but, yeah, 20 next year with how the balls are flying out. And, I mean, we were talking about – I think, like, the very first podcast we were talking about the juice balls. We were
yep.
– we didn't discover the juice balls, but we were definitely – on it in that very first people who were like, what the hell is going on? Because
cool kids.
Exactly. We were the hipsters. We're the prospect hipsters. Because
we were
watching these minor leaguers doing their thing in the minors and then coming up to the majors, and all of a sudden all their power was jumping. So for people that were watching the minor leagues hardcore, it was kind of more obvious. So I feel like, you know, yeah, just giving us credit for when we were the very, very beginning. I remember we were on that juice ball stuff. So
yeah, I think it was one of the one. It might even before it was the Raz ball. Might have been in our pilot two show, whatever, two episode days.
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, and Alfred's a guy that I've really come to like fall in love with over the last year. He's one of those guys that I think when, you know, as he was coming up, he was sort of a fringe top 100 guy. He was someone that was easy to waffle on as he went through bad stretches because, you know, with his sort of background, as enticing as it is from an upside perspective, I think it's really scary from a floor perspective. And I think he's really raised that floor quite a bit. The fact that the Blue Jays already gave him a call-up this year and then obviously had the Hammond injury, which is unfortunate, that tells me they have some faith in him. I imagine they're going to be making some moves going more toward a youth movement. Alfred could be really exciting in the mix in that outfield with Hernandez, other guys. I don't know. The Blue Jays are kind of an exciting team. Like 2-3 years down the road, if Bichette continues to progress and Vlad Jr. turns out to be the beast that we think he is,
yeah,
Alfred could be a major cog in a pretty fearsome lineup. You know,
Teoscar Hernandez keeps doing a little power speed thing. You know, not great, but
sure.
You know, another guy.
I like Teoscar a lot. If we're doing dynasty rankings, I'm much higher in Teoscar, I think, than a lot of people are. I streamed him a ton down the stretch in these RCLs, and you know, that power speed is valuable. And if he's getting playing time, quite frankly, I think he's the top 30 outfielder. No.
Yeah, I don't know exactly. I don't know exactly where he'd place, but like I said, he's another, you know, athletic power speed guy. Yeah, the Blue Jays got something going. It's about time they got some young blood in there with Batista and Encarnacion. And I was sick of them, sick of those dinosaurs in the middle of the order. All right, let's continue because we can't spend the whole episode on Alfred. And
we're going to have a Blue Jays episode. It may not be for 3 months, but we're going to have a Blue Jays episode.
Yeah, that's right. The Blue Jays episode's not coming for a while. So, all right, we gave a taste. All right, Forrest Whitley. I know we talked a lot about Forrest Whitley in the starting pitching show. You were a little lower. You had him outside your top 10. You caught some flack. I remember I had him like fourth or fifth. But you've seen the light. You got him ranked very high. So what do you think? What do you see for Whitley in his prime?
Yeah, I think this is a guy that you know, ultimately could be a beast in terms of, you know, elite swing and miss stuff. He's got a decent amount of control. It's decent at this point. It's not great. That's one of the questions that I have had with Whitley. He is a big guy, so there's that whole question to him, make sure the moving parts are together. his mechanics for the most part have looked, you know, pretty good. You know, he induces weak contact. He's got big tilt in the fastball. He uses that. I think he's always going to strike guys out. I wonder if he's going to be a little bit of a drain on whip. I don't see this guy being like a low one whip guy, even in really good ERA seasons where, you know, potentially he's a low three, you know, high two ERA guy. I still think he's going to hover like in his best seasons, like a, you know, 1.16, 1.17 whip, which isn't awful, but I don't think it's going to be great. So I don't think this guy is the best pitching prospect in baseball. I think he's a great pitching prospect. He's still going to be in the American League. Astros have done some good things, but it's mostly been with some of these like rebuild guys and stuff like that. You know, I love Whitley. I'm not ready to go Brett Honeywell, Michael Kopech on Whitley. I know there's a lot of people that put him up there. He is a great prospect. I think a lot of people are putting the cart before the horse a little bit because of how young he was in Double A, and obviously that shows great. But I think there has to be some concerns. I just want to say I love Forrest Whitley, but I think you gotta you know, slow your roll a little bit on him.
Yeah, I don't necessarily have him on that level either. And the things that I brought up in the past were the delivery is not quite as athletic as those two guys. He's a big dude, and when you watch, and he was pitching like, you know, he's younger, so he's not as advanced as Kopech and Honeywell have been working on stuff for a long time. So, you know, I understand he was working only from a stretch at the end. I understand he's still working on things. It's not like he's a 22-something guy. He was 19 for most of the year, I'm pretty sure. So I get that he's not a finished product. But yeah, it's not, the athleticism's not quite there. I love him though. I have him, again, right outside my top 20. I have him out right under that tier of Reyes, Buehler, Honeywell, and Kopech. He's the next guy. I don't quite have him in that tier, but once those guys graduate, he could definitely, it depends on how he progresses. But I'm with you. At this very moment, I don't think he's not at that level. The stuff's there. The ingredients are there. He's still kind of got to pull it together. He's a little raw when you kind of watch him, even though he's so physically dominant. So yeah, I think we're now on the same page with him for sure. Moving on to the next interesting guy who I'm kind of curious on your thoughts, Austin Meadows, because the tools are there to be a five category guy. He could be that, he could be like a souped up Benintendi as I've described him in the past, but injuries and just underperformance, and it's hard. We both have him around top 30. What are you thinking? What are you thinking some of the major, bigger publications are going to have him at too? Meadows is that weird prospect. That's why I kind of thought I wanted to highlight him.
If I was making a real life top 100 list, I think I would have dropped him down a little bit more. I just think the ceiling in terms of what he can be as a fantasy player is higher. But I don't know. I mean, for me, I still think he has to be top 50. It was just a rough season. He was injured. And, you know, just things never sort of got on track for him. It's really tough for me to completely write off a guy that I had in the top five, you know, a year later when we know there were injuries and some of that stuff that played his performance. Now, that being said, this guy is injury prone. And he seems to have sort of nagging stuff, too. He's had some fluky stuff mixed in. I hate to, you know, label somebody as injury prone this early in their career, but quite frankly, I mean, it has to be a factor. But what he can be, as you said, the souped-up Benintendi, this guy can be a true five-category asset, good batting average, hit for power, you know, this is a prototypical three-hitter with, like, 20 steal potentially speed. We didn't see that this year, though. So I know it's a tough sell for a lot of people. I still would be buying low. I don't want to sell on Austin Meadows. I'm gonna stake my claim here that I think Austin Meadows is still gonna be an all-star.
Yeah, I'm sticking with him too. Obviously, not to the extent of top five, but if he comes in next year completely healthy, it's not like he's an old guy. He's relatively young, so yeah, it was a down year, a lost year kind of. But he comes back. He looks healthy. He's hitting for average. He's hitting for a little power. He's running. The prospect stock will be right up, right through the roof, and he's knocking on the door of the majors. So it's tough to knock him too much. And I know I mentioned in the past a lot, it's like guys have down years, guys have career years. And when it happens in the minor leagues, people go, they start thinking it's more of a trend. Whereas in the majors, it's like, it's kind of obvious. Oh, it's a down year, it's a career year, don't overpay. or, you know, don't panic and trade him. Miners, it's a little different. You're kind of like, oh, maybe his stock is down. I think you got to hold on with Meadows. It's not as that elite guy, but so how about trading wise? Like, let's say you're a contender, you have Meadows. What's a reasonable? What kind of like MLB player would you look for? Who do you think you'd be able to grab? What level, like a top 50 guy? Is that too high? You know?
Yeah, I don't think you'll be able to get a top 50 guy for Meadows at this point.
As the centerpiece, you're looking top 100. I'm trying to think of like some veterans who would be in that range. Like Lorenzo Cain, is that not enough?
No.
You're saying Lorenzo Cain's too good?
I think Lorenzo Cain's too good for Meadows at this point.
Man, I don't know. How much better of a prospect can you expect to get for Cain? I love Cain. Cain's on my squad.
Yeah, see, I just like Cain. He's so productive. I mean, it's a risky trade, though. If you're...
Not necessarily straight up, just as a centerpiece. Like, you get Meadows, and then you get, you know, maybe like a, you know, Eric Fetty or something. Get a couple other guys.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's not. Yeah, if you got a couple pieces thrown in, I don't think that's a totally crazy trade. But there's got to be something that like makes up for it a little bit.
You're not giving up. You're not giving up Bo Bichette for Lorenzo Cain, right?
Unless like Cain signs somewhere awesome and he looks great and it's what your team needs, then you can win a championship. I don't think it's insane.
No, I know. In that case, it's not. But I feel like if I'm having Bichette, I'm looking at, I hope I have a stud for, you know, his whole career or however long you could hold him in your league.
It really just depends on the league. I mean, I have leagues where Bo Bichette, I wouldn't be able to trade for, like, Luis Castillo, you know. But
Luis Castillo, you're talking about the pit. He's pretty good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're talking, like, a points league, like a head-to-head points league, it's so different. If you're talking 12-team leagues, it's so different.
Even non-head-to-head points league, I think
if you were, like, a 16-team league, I think you can – the Cain for Meadows deal is okay. Anything deeper, I think that's fine, you know, especially against some of these 30-team leagues, as you know. There's prospect swaps made all the time, you know, because you're trying to get a couple of depth pieces. Anything can make a – you know, can swing a deal. But – I'm bad. I'm so bad at these sort of comp.
Well, it's hard because it's in a vacuum. You know, there's not an actual squad you're looking at.
I'd do Meadows for Cespedes. I think if I owned Cespedes, I would trade Cespedes for Meadows.
See, I wouldn't. I'd hold Cespedes.
You would. Now you. So that's what it is. Is you value Cespedes more than Cain.
I love Cain. I won a champ. I won that year. I won my dynasty league last year. He was a major contributor, but. Cespedes has that monster home run potential that I don't know if Cain, like, Cespedes could be like, oh, he just carried me this year. He was a top 15 player. I don't know if Cain has that gear other than being like, you know, just a really good, he averaged, you know what I mean? I hope I'm underselling him, you know?
Maybe I'm underselling Cespedes. Maybe I'm just mad at Cespedes because he's hurt and it was the first name that came to mind. Dude, I'm bad. I'm bad with trade things because, like, I have to, like, analyze the shit out of this.
Yeah, there's so many factors.
Throw in a question. Like, that's a great question. Gray can answer those questions in, like, 2 seconds. I prospect to major league value, that is such a tough.
Yeah, it's team dependent. But I was just trying to give, like, an idea of, like, you're trying to sell, like, the range. But I think we did a good job because we kind of disagreed there. So I think it does give a good range of what you can get. All right, let's move on.
Like Jay Bruce. Jay Bruce would definitely be too little for Austin Meadows.
Oh, no way. I mean, I know. Yeah, that's not enough.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah. Definitely want better than Jay Bruce. But maybe we're underrating Jay Bruce. We just hate Jay Bruce. He had a pretty good year.
I know he did. I'm thinking about all the guys that are on my Mets team in RAS 30.
All right. Moving on, Luis Gohara, who already got a taste of the majors. I, in my rankings, were a little higher than you. You had him back of the top 50. I would have him in, like, my top 30. I have him, like, right next to Meadows. Again, we're not gonna talk about some of the guys we talked about in the other episodes who we didn't have on each other's top 20. So we already talked about, like, Trammell, Robert, McMahon, Hayes. That was in Ral's top 20. We talked about Lewis, Kingery, Soto, those guys were in my top 20, and Walker. So we're not going to talk about those guys. Alfred and Whitley were both on our top 20s. Meadows was right there. So Gohar is someone I'm a little higher on, I guess, although depending on what you say to me right now, what you're talking about, maybe we like him just the same. Physical beast, throws hard, you know, major strikeout stuff, MLB ready, NL, NL East, even though the Braves park kind of plays neutral. They're not a pitcher's park anymore. He's a beast. I love Gohara. He's got a chance to be really good. I'm targeting him in redrafts. You know, in Dynasty, he's probably owned, and his value is very high right now. But I'm all in on Gohara. And I know we just drafted Seth Romero in our Prospects 1500 league. He's kind of, to me, Seth Romero's like hopefully the next Gohara. Just another little underrated, huge stuff guy. But I'm loving him, yeah.
And some question marks as well in terms of conditioning.
Exactly.
And maybe a little off the field stuff too.
Yeah.
But man, Gohara is nasty. The stuff is great. The fastball, upper 90s fastball. And I know some people said I sold it short, that it's, you know, more like 97, 98. I don't know. That's upper 90s to me. I haven't seen him throw 100 personally. Slider is nasty. That is a great pitch. I think I probably like a slider more than I like his fastball. And his changeup has really taken a step forward this year, though he doesn't throw it a ton. And I think he could probably be pretty similar to like a Luis Severino in terms of how he gets by. Home ballpark isn't great. But the division is, division's really nice. And I think he's going to get an opportunity out of spring training this year. You know, he just slipped under his limits. He had some decent starts. I think if you look through the numbers, was messy at times. I think he's, you know, in a 12-team, like RCL, I still think he's going to be tough to own. I think you're going to have to stream him. Deeper head-to-head leagues, points leagues, I think he's a guy you could take a little bit later on in your redraft leagues, in the draft, and potentially get, you know, a pretty big boom there, a pretty big hit. So in your dynasty leagues, he's probably already owned. His value is probably pretty high because he's getting a lot of hyperbole in the offseason on a lot of these lists. And it's as he should, you know, he's promoted aggressively. And just another player that was stolen from the Mariners system. I don't. Looking back, this trade looks completely insane. If they traded him for Malik Smith and Shea Simmons and then turned around and traded those guys to the Rays for Drew Smyly, who immediately got hurt. But that's Jerry DePoto doing Jerry DePoto stuff.
Seattle has been awful so with recent trades. They've been the anti-Cashman of trading.
They didn't need to. They could have brought up this young core this year. Like, Gohara could have been a factor for them somewhat this year. You know, they could have kept O'Neill and used him at points.
Alex Jackson, O'Neill, Gohara.
Alex Jackson, it's crazy. Alex Jackson looks like a beast in the fall league now. Like,
yeah, one of the best hitters in the fall league.
Yeah, he leads the league in homers as of last night.
Yeah, Seattle's a joke. Although they got Haniger, I guess. What do you think of Haniger?
That was a good trade. That was a good trade. I like that trade. I like Haniger.
That was a Taiwan Walker trade.
Yeah, I don't know if Haniger's going to be overrated this year or if he's a guy that you definitely should buy in on. I'm gonna own him a few places. I'm definitely gonna, you know, try to acquire him where I can, but I don't know if I buy in as hard as some people are. Some people are really buying in. I think some people think this guy's going to be the big breakout next year, and I can see where the signs are, but you know, for me the player in that deal is still Gene Segura. Segura is a great fantasy asset.
Yeah, Haniger seems more solid to me. He had a great run in the beginning of the year and a great run in the end, and in between there was an oblique injury, so it's easy to say, he was healthy all year. What was that?
Yeah, you're right.
What's up?
I said, yeah, you're totally right. But he's a guy who's been off injured throughout his career as well, and it's stuff like obliques and hammies and, you know.
Yeah, I just brought him up because I have a decision. I got to keep him for $3 or I have Kershaw for $68 in a $260 league. And I've been watching Kershaw's every start. I'm going, 92, 93, more 92. I'm going, where's that mid-90s heat?
And every so often, it's 94 now. It's 94 now. Yeah.
94 is like his, I was like his top. He does, every now and then there's one that, but I was like, he's throwing that cutter more. I'm like, yeah, you're transitioning into, you know, being a little older. I don't know if I want to keep him for that much money, but
I think I would keep Haniger for that much money because I feel like you're going against the grain a little bit. But when you look at the value and what the return is and how injured this guy is and the fact that you're still going to be able to replace him with a pretty good player.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, will you be able to potentially bid on him at a lower price?
Yeah. He could go lower. He could go higher. I don't.
So
there's some good pitchers left. There's some good players left in our pool.
I, I like Haniger. He said $3 versus 68. I think I like Haniger at $3. I think I would go with that and then play the field and see what I could do. But Razzball Prospect Podcast, where we trade Austin Meadows for Cespedes and don't keep Kershaw, but we keep Haniger instead. We know our fantasy baseball.
Actually, two or three years ago, I drafted Meadows right out of right out of high school in my dynasty draft, and I traded him for Jimmy Nelson when I was making a surprise run, and Nelson had a good first half, and then he was fucking horrible, and I was like, what a horrible trade I made. And then this year he blew up because he was still on my squad. I was like, what a great trade. And then he got hurt. I was like, fucking trade.
Yep. Yeah, I traded for him at the deadline. I'm rebuilding in this one league. I traded for him at deadline. It's a head-to-head points league, and I get him. Everyone's like, oh, what a steal. I traded him for a couple spare parts, and one of them turned out to be Denelson Lamet, and I think I'd rather keep Lamet in this league right now than Jimmy Nelson because he has this injury. And it was a freak thing. He was sliding into a base.
It killed me.
Made me love the DH. But anyway, yeah, I don't want to piss everyone off.
I'm hoping because it's not a throwing shoulder injury, it's not as bad as if he got it. Does that make any sense? Is that just rationalizing it?
I think it's just rationalizing it.
But you think rationalizing it to shoulder?
Yeah.
And
but you know, making DH comments would be like making pro-Trump comments or anti-Trump comments. Like when you get into the DH debate, it's like getting into the Trump debate. You're in the weeds, man, and you're not getting out. So we better get away from this.
We're both
pro-DH.
DH.
We shouldn't tell anyone that, though. We're going to. I don't want to piss off the alt senior circuit folks like Gray.
Yeah, well, fuck
major
it.
Anti-DH Gray, as is Jack, as is JFO.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot of anti-DH people. They call them the purists, but I don't know. I grew up a Yankee fan, an AL guy. I only knew the DH, So I don't know. Maybe that has something to do with it. But all right, RotoWear.com. Kenneth Cashman. Guys churning out the highest quality t-shirts in all fantasy. Forget fantasy, just in clothing. He's like, who's a clothing mogul? What's the Damon? What's that guy's name on
Lifshitz? How about Ralph Lauren?
Ralph Lauren. There you go. He's beyond fantasy now. He's in that Ralph Lauren range. RotoWear.com at RotoWear. Guys got designs for football, designs for basketball, designs for hockey. Designs for baseball, obviously. Kids, adults, women's, men's, whatever. Whatever the hell you are, he's got shirts for you. Best designs. He used to rap. Finger on the pulse. T-shirt with jeans. Wear it out to a bar. You guys know the deal. Honestly, support him. 15% off. Sagnoff. Sagnoff. I mean, support this man. Good dude. You got any kind words for RotoWear, Ralph?
Yeah, I'm wearing my Roto God shirt as I always do. It's like a good luck thing. Anytime I record or write, I throw in a little Roto wear. It's like my game day gear, I'm that much of a geek. But no, I want to say Kenny and I are having a great conversation with the Crabs today about how hijinks on Halloween has gone away. Now, if you're a man listening to this podcast and you egg some houses, you toilet papered some trees, you silly string people, you egged people. You did crazy stuff on Halloween, then Kenny is your man because he supports your cause, and he is part of a big initiative we have going with the Crab Army, and that is we want to bring mischief back to Halloween. So great t-shirts, great guy, great American.
I have partaken in some of that stuff in my younger years, but
woo!
Now that I'm a little older, you own a house. How would you like it if your house was egged when you woke up and toilet papered?
And I quote the leader of our movement, Kenneth Cashman, if my house was egged, I would respect that kid for doing it. He said that today. He said that. That's a direct quote, verbatim.
From some, again, but sometimes, you can egg a house, maybe the egg breaks a window. You know what I mean?
Oh, that would be a mess.
Yeah, that's happened. So I don't know. So I get, as a kid, I understand it. But silly
moderate hijinks. Well...
I like mess up stop
signs
or something.
Well-executed hijinks. We want you to have plans. This is how you learn, as our former president, George W. Bush, best presidential first pitch thrower would say, it's what he would call strategery. All right? You need to have some strategery when you're doing these attacks on your neighbor's homes.
All right, I think you're fighting a losing battle. I think the days of that could be over, but you never know.
Man. I drove 40 minutes back roads into Boston today at 5:30 in the morning is when I left my house because I have an early meeting. I talk about from time to time on Wednesdays where I do my networking meeting for work. And I didn't see anything anywhere. That's why I took this route because I was like, I want to see some toilet paper trees, some eggs, some silly string, you know. So nothing. There was nothing.
We're disappointed in today's youth. Not enough destruction. You're not holding up the day, you know, damn kids. We have no one to yell at. You know?
Did I tell you what my son did? We're never gonna get through this podcast, by the way. Did I tell you what my son did?
No.
And I'm proud of him for doing this. But I guess the kids from the high school came in and they had this idea that they wanted to have the kids apparently collect change for UNICEF in addition to trick-or-treating. Now, my 50-year-old boss from Long Island, by the way, said that it's totally normal on Long Island to do this, to collect for UNICEF. Okay, thanks.
No one's ever come up to my door trick-or-treat and give me money for charity. Never.
His hit rate was 23 out of 25 houses. 23 out of 25 houses. He hit everyone. He had like $16. He had like $16, mostly cash, and a ton of change. He brought it to school today. He was so proud of himself. My son's 7, by the way. But he was a Lego Batman collecting for UNICEF.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was my first Halloween where like my youngest, who's 2 now, can walk up the steps and just goes ham in the candy bowl. Like he's the thief. He would go right into the candy bowl, and he's so little and cute they didn't care. And then my daughter is very like particular. So she would pick like 2 candies that she wanted and pick them up, and then my other son would grab candy and then ask for money for UNICEF. So
you had a whole system. Yeah,
it's their personalities. Yeah, it's their personalities. It's really funny.
My 2-year-old nephew wore the same wore the costume I wore when I was 2. So there's my
really.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a big pumpkin. You just put that over there. It's just a big pumpkin. All right. Ooh. Prospects, back, you know, RotoWare, back to RotoWare, RotoWare.com, at RotoWare, promo code SAGNOFF. You guys know the deal with their shirts. Honestly, if you haven't gotten one yet, you have to get one. You have to get at least one, and if you've already gotten one, you know how good it is. So, yeah, you're on your own there. You can get more. All right. Continuing on. Trying to figure out we've talked about 4 guys in the 50, but let's talk about Harrison Bader because he's close to the majors. He got some light, but St. Louis has so many outfielders. I don't know if there's playing time here. If there is though, you know, 270, 25, 15, I think he hits the ball extremely hard. He could be, I don't know if he's a star, but in my head, I have him as like, you know, a top 50, top 60 fantasy player, chips in everywhere. Obviously, it will always be underrated, and if he's ever good, people will claim, you know, Cardinals, devil magic, even though their scouting's just better. They take guys who hit the ball hard. It's like, I'm kind of sick of hearing the Cardinals, devil magic, because it's bullshit. They're just better at scouting. But moving on from that, I just don't see the playing time. What are you thinking? What are you thinking on the whole thing, Ralph?
Can I start, you know, Bader's a New York kid. I'm sure he's probably a Yankees fan, but I want to start like a Bader to the Mets for like Familia deal. Like it seems like it makes too much sense. You get your closer and
yeah, unfortunately
Bader gets some freedom. I don't know. He'd be injured too quickly with the Mets, but no, I want to see this kid get every day at bats. I know his splits against righties are a little brutal. He doesn't really hit for power, but I think I think that can come along if that's the one area of the game he has to improve. Okay, at worst, you know, he'll be a great platoon guy in terms of a stream and probably like a good bat bench. I swear to God, I'm not drunk. bench bat for your team. You kind of filter in, you know, when he plays. Maybe somebody else is sitting, but I like Bader, man. He crushes left-handers. He absolutely crushes left-handed pitching, but as I said, he needs to improve, particularly power against righties.
Yeah. So, what do you think about the playing time?
I don't think he's going to get it in St. Louis. I mean, I can't imagine. I know I went in this whole thing about the Mets and yeah, whatever. I don't see it right now. I mean, where does he fit into that outfield?
Piscotty would have to suck again. Grichuk would have to continue not doing. There'd have to be a lot of poor performance, which is possible. You know, things happen.
Fam would have to drop off. I don't see that totally happening. Yeah.
Someone would have to drop off.
Martinez is still in the mix as well, and he was really good this year.
And they got Tyler O'Neill too, just because Seattle, they were giving him away, and then St. Louis is like, fuck it. Why, you know, I'm not going to pass him up just because we have too many guys. So they have him too now. Who knows how the playing time's going to shake out.
Tyler O'Neill to Toronto with somebody else for Josh Donaldson.
I don't know. It doesn't seem like a Cardinals move, but yeah.
No, not at all. I think Thompson wants him to do that, but they won't.
It's an interesting thought just to, you know, get rid of the logjam, but I guess we can talk about Tyler O'Neill too. I still love O'Neill. I'm actually, pure fantasy-wise, I think I'm higher on O'Neill than Bader in my rankings. I'm going O'Neill. O'Neill runs, you know, O'Neill could snag 10 bags a season. He's not like a slow dude, and he's an extremely hard worker. He works on his speed. I think the speed's going to stay. He hits the ball in the air a ton. He crushes the ball. I know the average wasn't that high, but I think O'Neill could hit, like, you know, 35 homers, steal 10 bags. Maybe the average is like 250, 260, but I love O'Neill. I got him very high as well. I would prefer him to Bader. Playing time is an issue, which is annoying now, but, what can you do about that?
That weighed a little bit. It's 15 spots. I think that weighed into it a little bit. The batting average weighed into it a little bit because Bader does run. I think O'Neill's actually faster, personally. I think O'Neill's athleticism gets totally undersold, but yeah. There was a lot of production that happened during like a month and a half stretch for O'Neill where it was a little bit more consistent throughout the season with Bader. And even though his splits aren't great, I don't think he's going to struggle as much. Across an entire season, he's going to give you a lot of consistency. And there's some formats like head-to-head where that does kind of matter. So I think that's what the difference is for me. I do think that O'Neill has a standout skill, and that is pretty close to almost 80 grade power. You know,
I know some
people put a 70 on it. It's as close to 80. And I know they don't like to give 80s, but man, when he gets a hold of one, he gets a hold of the ball. I mean, I can't wait to see what the exit velocities are once they have Statcast on him. I want him to get up to the majors. I want him to get traded. I wanted him to get traded from Seattle, and then they traded him to the worst possible place. The only place that would have been worse was like the Red Sox, you know? And even then, they probably would have like figured out how to get him into the lineup.
it had to be a
National League team with a logjam in the outfield with young, controllable players in the outfield, and they're cheap. It's like, it's a perfect storm of shit, to be quite honest with you.
And they needed to sign Dexter Fowler like we needed a hole in the head just for us prospect downs.
Oh my God. It was just to keep him away from the Cubs. I feel like that was just like a total spite move.
Yeah, and you know what? I could see it. Even though the Cubs, they're overpacked too, so they didn't need him. Made it easy for them.
They needed him at the top of the order. I think he fit a need for them, actually. But they were stupid, and they spent all that money on
in their
Josh.
Lineup. And they were using Happ in center field. Well, he's not really Hayward, a center fielder. I got you. All right. How about Kyle Lewis? Because everything out of what you're hearing about Kyle Lewis is the knee's acting up again. I don't know, man. It would be hard to trade for him. I guess you have to hold him. We're not doctors, so it's like, how could we possibly know how much to how much the knee is going to affect him in the future. But, I mean, would you be completely scared off by him in a trade? If you're trading with someone and they're like, Kyle Lewis is the centerpiece, so you're going to be like, nah, I want to wait?
I wouldn't have a few weeks ago, but I'm a little nervous. A little nervous now. I just am. He finished up the season great for Modesto, and that's not an easy – that's not an easy place to hit. That's one of the worst parks in the Cal League. Like, it's a bad place to hit. That and Stockton are not good places to hit. And he hit pretty well, and he had a great playoff run, so he was clutch. And I thought, hey, he's ending the season on a high note. He's gone to the Fall League, and how much has he even played? I know the numbers weren't great, but, I mean, how many games has he even played in the Fall League?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'd have to pull that up, but the fact that this injury has lingered as long as it has is definitely concerning, for sure.
Yeah, and at the time it was concerning. We talked about it. It was devastating. We said it's not just a normal knee injury, and then you know, he gets to close, he starts rehabbing and he's coming back and he's back on the field and he's hitting homers and you're kind of like, all right, he's a young dude. We're going to give him the benefit of the doubt. He's going to be back and he's going to be good, but it's scary. Yeah, I don't think, I definitely would not be trading for him as a centerpiece. And I don't think that I don't think a Lewis owner is going to want to give him up as anything but that. So he's just kind of
Yeah. I didn't even realize it. I guess I've been in my hole for the last couple of days writing. But yeah, he actually had an MRI on his knee the other day.
Yeah, it acted up again.
No structural damage, but yeah.
Yeah, that's. I think I read that from Longenhagen, but I don't know if he's the one who reported it. That's just where I picked it up from.
Yeah, that's not good. I would imagine that he's probably done with the fall league then. That happened to Moncada last season. He actually got hurt in the fall league.
Yeah, unfortunately, it wasn't, you know, Moncada never had a devastating knee injury, but.
No, yeah. Of course not. But yeah.
All right, moving on to the next highly talented, but maybe cause for worry, Kevin Maitán, who, you know, the prodigy, Miguel Cabrera, and now a lot of the reports are, obviously the performance was kind of mediocre. A lot of reports are he's getting a little bigger. How far do you drop him based on, you know, he's still got the tools to be an absolute beast, but a little more raw than people thought. It's rough. Where do you, it's like, yeah, how high do you go on him? So I have him probably right around top 50 now. I was higher before. I had him, you know, closer to that top 20 to 25 range, but he's not, he didn't crush it. And I don't know. So to me, he's more of like, you know, a top 50, maybe with like where would you put like him versus Leody Tavares? Where did you rank those guys?
I had Kevin Maitán 42 and I had Leody Tavares 43.
Oh, you did? Wow. Maybe that snuck in subconsciously, but I feel like both those guys, young, extremely talented, but still question marks. So I don't know. Where do you, so yeah, what's your thinking on Maitán and like how much?
Yeah, I would move Maitán out of my top 50. He probably would have been more like 58 now. I think I'm comfortable with that number, just saying off the top of my head and not really going back and forth. But I think I'd have to drop him out of the top 50. Tavares sticks there for me. We've seen him here. He's got, you know, a good body. This as insanely homoerotic as that sounds. He's got, you know, he's got a good fitness level. You know, he actually had a decent season. I know the numbers don't look great. 249, 312, 360. He was 18 in a full season league. It was an aggressive assignment. Still hit for a little bit of power. Stole 20 bases. You know, I think it's there with Tavares. He's a guy that next season could really have a massive breakout year, like, you know, Fernando Tatis Jr. kind of a year with power and speed and all that sort of stuff. So I'm not, you know, I'm comfortable where I rank Tavares, obviously, but with the Maitán news, what I've heard about scouts, what I think the general consensus feels about Maitán at this point, you know, he's still a top prospect. I think he's still a top 100 guy easy, like I said. He's right outside my top 50 now, probably, but there were a lot of knocks, and I think with the amount of hype this kid got, people, for as long as he did, people love that he's failing too, you know? So a lot of people want to stay away from him. You know, I think that when you have these, like, if LeBron James fell flat in his face, that's that's kind of what Maitán is at right now, that he came over here and just was not impressive. People were like, even the scouting reports were, of his ability and his polish. I think that was the thing. Not the body, all that sort of stuff. That's crap. I mean, you know, Miguel Cabrera has been really good for a long time. He had a shit body. You know, I don't know if you ever heard of Babe Ruth, but whatever about the body. It's the fact that the polish wasn't there. That's scary.
Yeah, no, now I'm thinking about all, you know, now I'm thinking about John Kruk, David Wells, Cecil Fielder. Yeah, you can get by without the great body, but yeah, it's concerning. And I guess, you know, a rank for someone like him, I feel like a ranking doesn't really give him justice, just because if you want that pure upside, you're gonna take him over like a Harrison Bader, you know, depending on what you're looking for. So for him, it's kind of like, he's kind of like outside the rankings. How much pure upside you want with a big major bust factor? He could be, you know, it's such a long way off, but it's very high risk. All right, let's transition to talking some of these guys in as a group, because we're coming to the end. And some of these guys are kind of similar prospects. So I think Mikel Baez, Mackenzie Gore, Hunter Green, Sixto Sanchez. Those four guys are fastballs, you know, basically ace potential. They're all young. They don't have that much experience. You rank them. You had Baez first out of all of them. Is that correct?
I did.
So yeah. So why don't you start on why do you have Baez first and just any thoughts in that group of extremely high potential, you know, low experience guys?
Yeah, I think, you know, the biggest question marks obviously are still Hunter Green and Mackenzie Gore. Of that group, I like Baez the best. You know, obviously big guy. You know, his secondary stuff is much better than people even realize. Like that changeup is a plus-plus pitch. You know, Baseball Prospectus, and I read somebody over there that, you know, was actually scouting the Midwest League, ranked it as the best off-speed pitch and, you know, secondary in the entire league and potentially in the entire Padres organization. And he's got a great fastball to go with it, above-average curveball. Misses a ton of bats, but they say, you know, he's very aggressive in the strike zone, goes after guys, maybe could, you know, he'll hit you on the black to righties and lefties, but he will leave one in the zone from time to time and will be prone to some homers. So that's really the only knock on him. But I think that's maybe a slight tweak in sort of approach and sequencing and some of that stuff, but it's all there. And I feel like this kid could be in the majors by the end of next season. He's that good, you know? As for Gore and Green, I think next year is a big one. Right now, Gore has the slight lead over Green, though the tape you see of Green's mechanics and his stuff, he does look great. Gore looks like he's like ready to pitch in Double A like tomorrow, you know. So the pitchability is there. And then as for Sixto, I'm drawing a blank. I think I ranked him 36. So he's a few spots lower than those guys. I had Baez 30. 31 for Gore, 32 for Green. So they're all like right there. Sixto has, you know, great stuff, you know, across the board. Fastball, obviously, you know, we've heard about how it touches 100 from a really small package. He gets the Pedro Martinez comparisons, which, you know, I don't throw those around lightly around here growing up on Pedro. But he's got the stuff to do it. Struggled a little bit when he did hit high A, but I have no doubt in my mind he's going to, you know, he's going to hit Clearwater next year in the Florida State League and probably dominate. But I guess the only questions at this point with Sanchez are durability because of his frame. But he does have good control and commands, really good stuff. He doesn't have the same sort of body I think some of these other guys have. And I really think that, you know, Hunter Green and Gore have every bit the stuff that Sanchez has.
Yeah, I do think Green, you know, the debut wasn't that great. His stuff was getting hit. Obviously, he was still throwing 100. He was still throwing very hard, but he was getting hit. The reports and, you know, the stuff coming out from the backfield scouts, like our boy Casey Kusilek. Is it Casey?
It's Chris.
Chris, I fucking always get his name wrong. I have a mental block on his first name. Chris Kusilek. Yeah, it seemed like Gore was the one impressing more. That's just how it was when they got into Pro Bowl. So, you know, even – and I forgot Green was throwing – I forgot he was throwing somewhere else. But he was getting hit. The scouts were saying that the guys were on his stuff. So, still has great stuff. I still love him. But, yeah, I believe Gore did jump ahead of him. I was very aggressive in ranking Green in my midseason list. I think I had him, again, around 20, 25, right with that Maiton area. He's dropped a little bit for me. He's now like – you know, 35, 40 area. I did do a ranking. I do have it ranked out. It's kind of too long to go through everyone and to compare it to Ralph's. It's kind of too big of a pain in the ass on the podcast. So I felt like we'll just stick with the – I had him 32 on mine, and I had Gore 31. So I kind of got him close. But and Tristan McKenzie, who I skipped, I have him over both of them, and I know Ralph loves McKenzie, but
yes, I do
talk
too
about him so much that, yeah, there's nothing really to go in on them. So, yeah, so Green dropped a little bit. Love Baez, extremely high on Baez in my midseason rank. I don't think I'd put Baez ahead of Gore. I completely get it. Or Green. I don't have him ahead of either of them. He's a little older than those guys, but love him. Huge stuff. You want to talk up Baez a little more again versus those guys? Because that's going to be an interesting one that I think a lot of people are going to have a choice on. And you're in the minority. I think Baez is obviously more of the sleeper to those guys. So hype up Baez a little bit over those guys.
Yeah, I think when it, you know, in all the categories, Gore has the best pitchability of all the different pitches that he throws, and I think he has the highest upside. He's a lefty, you got to like that. But Baez also has two excellent pitches and then a really good third pitch, and he's got the build and all that sort of stuff going for him. He's got better mechanics than Gore. Gore has really screwy mechanics when you break it down. These guys like, what's his name? Chris O'Leary, who's the lunatic ranter that loves to break down mechanics from, like, still shots. Hates Gore, loves Green. And I think Green at this point is too raw. So Baez is probably 2 years closer to the majors, if not three. And big 6'8 Cuban with a nasty off-speed pitch, an above-average breaking ball, and a high to mid-90s heater with some downward tilt that he can spot, and he does not scare to pinch inside. He's a monster. This guy's got swag for days. Take him.
There you go. That's your argument.
And it sounded like Tay-Hole saying swag for days and stuff. But seriously, he's got tons of swagger on the mound. I love him.
Hey, so yeah, it's legitimate for a fantasy squad if you like watching your players, I guess, and rooting for them. But, you know, it's kind of cold hard numbers. But either way, he's got the fastball. Like you said, he's got the second pitch. I would respect someone taking Baez over those guys. It's ballsy. I don't think I would do it. But there's your argument right there. All right, moving on into some high upside hitters. Joe Adell, Esteban Florial, Leody Tavares, Jumai Jones. I don't think I'm pronouncing that name right. Jmy Jones, I don't know how to pronounce it. But those four guys, all power speed guys, all very high upsides. Maybe Jones doesn't have quite as much upside as the other three just from a physical power perspective, but Jones does have power. I love all these guys. I would target each of them. I have them ranked. I don't have them ranked extremely high. I have them in the 30 range, but quite honestly, I have Meadows over them right now. If push comes to shove, it would be hard to pass on one of those guys and take Meadows. It's like, that's like we were just talking about. You have to give Meadows the benefit of the doubt. Yeah. All these guys could be, you know, I'm stuttering like crazy here because I want to say that they have the talent to be top 20 prospects. And if I was going to be extremely aggressive just from the pure skill standpoint and how much damage they could do in fantasy, 5x5 power speed combinations, they'd be top 20. Tavares obviously kind of didn't have as good of seasons as the other ones. Adell is, you know, just played barely any year, so he's a little different. But I love these guys. Do any of them, does Florial's K's concern you a lot? Is there any, what are the red flags here? How would you separate these four guys?
Well, I had Florial 37, Jones 38, and Joe Adell 39. And then I had Leody Tavares, who I think you mentioned as well, 43. So they were all
right there. Yeah, exactly.
Right there. I have Florial the highest because I think that the strikeout thing is something that he can work on. And I think that, you know, even with the strikeouts, he makes really good contact. He's adept at sort of, you know, going the other way, and it shows in the batting average. He had good on base ability. He knows how to take a walk. He knows how to work a count, and he hits for power. And there's 20 steel speed. So I just think it's all there. This guy is sort of the perfect package. If he gets that strikeout rate down to 25%, even in this day and age, I don't think it's going to be an issue. You know, I don't worry about strikeouts too much. Just like, you know, I think that someone like him with big raw power that's, you know, as young as he is. I mean, what is he? Does he turn 20, I think, at the end of November?
Yeah, sounds right.
December. And he was doing it in full season ball, got the call up to high A in the Florida State League and was still hitting for some power and making hard contact, which is not easy to do. That's like the opposite PCL. So that's why I had him ranked as high as I do. I love the organization as well with the Yankees. You know, we have to see the Angels bring some of these guys to fruition and be pretty good players. We've seen that with the Yankees now, obviously, with the run they had and the turnaround they've had. So trust the organization as well. Hopefully he doesn't get traded. I know I've heard whispers that he's an untouchable, but I don't know. I think everybody has a price. Jones, for me, is probably the safest of the four that we're talking about, or at least the immediate three here in terms of Florial, Jones, and Adell. You know, he has some power, probably doesn't have as high of raw power or ultimate power ceiling that Florial or Adell do. But I think, you know, batting average-wise, he may have the highest. He's going to steal some bases. He's just a really good hitter. I think his floor is probably the highest of the three. Adele to me is, you know, just a massive power bat. There is some speed there, but I think eventually this guy is going to be your prototypical slugging right fielder, left fielder, you know, corner outfield type. Batting average, I think, will be pretty good. You know, his approach at the plate and his strikeouts were you know, much exaggerated, it seemed. I mean, he was sub 25% in terms of his K rates and looked really good. Same thing in instruct, looked really good in instructional ball as well. So I'm very high in Adele. I think other than the top pitchers, you know, he'd probably be my first bat that I would take. So, yeah, I mean, I like all these guys, and I think they're all very interesting power speed guys too, which is, you know, the biggest target for me.
Yeah, depending on my team, I might take Adele over Green and Gore because, I mean, that's an impact bat. If you're looking for an impact bat in a first-year player draft, I would take him over him. I don't think it's that crazy. And the other guys, obviously, not first-year players. Jermai Jones, loved him on my midseason list, exploded after a poor start. Guys demand, getting a lot of hype. And, you know, Leody kind of more of in like the my time role where he hasn't done it yet, but the tools are great. And he's been 18, he held his own. So it's not like the numbers are horrible, but all these guys, like I said, I think are beasts. If you're in a draft where they're available, I think you're getting a top talent and you hold on for dear life. So, yeah. So with those pitchers we mentioned before, these guys, that's like the top 35, 20 to 35, really high upside. All great picks. Kind of could be top 20 prospect. The ability is just as high as the top 20 guys, in my opinion. If you're looking at like Hayes, McMahon, you know, I don't necessarily know if McMahon and Hayes are even better than them. I know we both do have them ranked higher, but I feel like it's worth saying that these guys are top 20 in my mind, even though they're kind of below that based on the actual ranking. If that makes any sense at all. All right, moving on to let's go back to pitching. Let's talk about another tier. Let's talk about Mitch Keller, Colby Allard, Soraka, and Jack Flaherty. I know Keller's not really in that tier. He's in maybe the elite tier, and he's been getting rave reviews in the Arizona Fall League. People are loving his stuff. Me and Ralph have always kind of shit on him. He's growing on me. You know, he's getting closer to the majors. The fast, you know, I'm still worried that it's more of a – he's not going to be a huge strikeout guy, but he's got a nasty fastball that moves. He throws it hard. He's got the slider. He's got good command, you know, so maybe he's not in with the Allard, Soraka, Flaherty group, but I feel like this is the next group of pitchers that are, they're good, they're solid. Is Keller, did he separate of that group from you, or no, you like some of the other guys in that area?
No, I had Allard ranked 41, and I had Keller ranked, I think, 51, 52. Okay. So I'm a little lower on Keller than some other people. You know, he did have an injury this year as well, I think. Last offseason, too, didn't he? Didn't he have an elbow thing at one point? I would have to check on that.
He definitely did. He definitely had a few. I know he got stung by a bee during
one of
the year.
Them was?
But, yeah, before that, there was a real forearm strain injury. Yeah, there was an issue.
Yeah, okay. So, and the thing is, like, I think that Mike Soroka, to me, like, comparing the two players, I think I take Soroka. I really do, and I think there might even be a little bit more ceiling with him. He's younger than Keller and played at a higher level and was great. I mean, he had a 2.75 and a 1.09 whip in 154 innings at Double A at 19 years old. He's unbelievably polished. So I felt I had to go with him there. I had Puck. I had him as well. I had a Keller. I think his ultimate upside is higher. I like those lefties with the strikeout ability. And I think that's where I'm at with Allard or Allard. We never really figured out how to properly say his name. But my main man, Colby, I like the fact that he's a lefty. I love his curveball. It's a great pitch. I think it even gets under-ranked at times. He held his own. He was healthy for a few years now. Pitched 150 innings at AA. The numbers weren't unbelievable. I mean, a 3.18 ERA is nothing. You know, at, you know, 19 years old in Double A, shouldn't be dismissed, but 1.27 whip, and I know the K per nine was underwhelming, and that's the number that everybody looks at. I do think he'll miss more bats over time. I think that will come. These guys were, you know, levels ahead of where their age said they would be. These are guys that should have been in the Midwest League, you know, but they were playing in the Southern League for the entire year. Meaning, you know, Allard and Soroka. So hopefully I didn't go off topic too much there, but It's why I'm still so high on Alar, and I'm gonna keep him where he is. I still have him 41. I wouldn't swap him. And Keller, for me, I think he's a Baseball America list guy. I think he's somebody that his value as a prospect is always going to be higher than he is as a pitcher. I could be wrong because he's going to come in and be polished, but I just don't think there's a ton of upside there. I think he's going to be a very good pitcher. He's going to be 12-team relevant, but I do actually think he's more like a Jack Flaherty than I think he's one of these guys with a potential really high upside.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, we agree on there. We can't have a counter opinion on Keller. I know it's deja vu for me because we talked very similar about him on the pitching show. But he was wowing stuff. He was wowing people in the Arizona Fall League. So I was getting a little more on him. I didn't love the reports that Allard was sitting in the high 80s on a lot of his heat. Whenever I've watched him, you know, it's tough. You don't really get a gun on him. It's one of those things where it's like, he's this good against advanced competition. And to the strikeout numbers, he was striking more guys out at the end of the year. He was putting up some 11 strikeout games. So he was showing his stuff at the end of the season. He was doing it with a fastball that was what they were saying, maybe like 88 to 89 to 82, 92 or something like that. If he's this good now against 92. That competition, if he ticks up a little bit on the fastball, he's a good pitcher. He knows how to pitch. He's not just a thrower. You know, maybe he's not one of the traditional guys, but I love Allard too. I have him top 50. I think you're probably a little higher at 41, but yeah, that same area. And
great command and control. And I think that we get so caught up in velocity. Everybody gets so caught up in velocity. I don't care. I want to know if he throws strikes. Can he throw strikes? You know, induce contact, miss bats. Like, I get the velocity thing, but it only goes to a certain point. Like, there are a lot of good pitchers that throw 93, 94 that are much better than a lot of guys that throw 100 miles an hour. There's a lot of guys that throw really hard that are in AAA, like Pat Light, who hasn't seen the light of day. Pun totally intended.
And we see all the time guys who don't throw hard and have nasty curveballs have crazy strikeout numbers. You know, Rich Hill.
Tyler Glass now.
What's up?
It's too bad Tyler Glass now can't throw strikes, right?
Well, and he throws 100 miles an hour. That's exactly your point, basically, just the pure stuff versus command guy. Yeah,
not 100, but he's probably mid-90s, though, right?
He used to be mid-90s. I think he was sitting like 93. I think he had an average 93-mile-per-hour fastball, maybe.
Yeah, I thought Glasnow ticked down a little bit, actually.
Yeah, he did tick down a little bit.
But he's the stuff guy. I think, like, Allard has feel. Like, that's a pitcher, you know? Like, it's a guy that knows how to throw. And I'm willing to invest in the floor more with pitchers, where I'm willing to invest more in the upside of the ceiling with a hitter. I don't know if that's something you agree or disagree on.
No, I don't think so. Because
no, you're more upside with pitchers?
I don't think it's either or. It's kind of just like, so it depends. In my dynasty league, and depending on what league you're in, like you need bangers. You need to, in order to win, you need high upside players almost. It's a 12-team league. Almost everywhere, but in like a 20 or 30 team league where a solid pitcher has a lot of value and, you know, you struggle even to have a guy throw innings. Yeah, a safer guy does have value. But most of my rankings are for like, I'm thinking in my head, I have like a 12 to 14 team league when I'm ranking guys. It's not for like a super deep league, because then some of the safer guys to me would rise, and I kind of, it's more fun to rank the upside. I get what you're saying, and it's kind of, we didn't talk about Flaherty much, but Flaherty gets that same rap. Very safe, knows how to pitch, but doesn't have the outside stuff. And if you're looking at pure numbers, I believe, I know you hate Cato, but I believe Cato, pure numbers, has him extremely high, like the top pitching prospect in the game, or very, very high. Whereas when you watch him and the stuff's not really on that next level. So
yeah,
we have these, I think we both have these guys in relatively similar spots.
Not too much safety. I like a little danger. I want stuff, but ultimately when we're comparing two guys with stuff or whatever, maybe I'll take the higher floor, you know?
I mean, I have Hader on my dynasty team, and I have Allard on my dynasty team. So I've got the risk going both directions.
You've got the lefty fever.
I always take lefties. That's not... I also took John Lamb 2 years ago, so, you know. You remember him?
Yes, I remember him. Where did he turn up? Is he in the San Diego organization now? He's back in baseball.
Yeah, I want to say Tampa Bay or San Diego. Yeah, one of those. He's in them. He just couldn't get healthy, but I do love my lefties. All right, let's continue on. Let's talk about the mashers, the power-hitting mashers. We talked about Tyler O'Neill already, but Michael Chavez, Kristen Stewart, Bobby Bradley. Let's throw Jordan Alvarez and Jesus Sanchez in there too, even though I was going to talk about them separately. But let's throw all these big mashers in the mix together. I already said I love O'Neill. He has speed too. Out of these other guys too, we talk like Kristen Stewart, I think, is underrated. I think this Kristen Stewart could come in and be an absolute 30-plus homer hitting beast. He doesn't really get talked about that much.
No.
Do you want to talk about these power hitters a little bit? I mean,
I'd love to. I have Kristen Stewart actually 35th. I have him higher than Floreal. I have him higher than Jones. I think that Stewart, there's a chance this guy could come up in July and mash. And in this environment, if the ball stays juiced, and I don't think it's going anywhere with the ratings and just the vibe and general hype that's happened around this World Series, this last World Series. But, I think Stewart's the kind of guy that's perfect for this environment. He's a DH. This guy is awful in the field. You know, he's barely even a left fielder, but he's led the league that he's hit in consecutive years. He put up massive power numbers in the Florida State League, which really should not be undersold. I know I already made this point earlier in the podcast, so, you know, point taken. But Stewart, to me, is a guy that can come in and surprise some people. I don't have him ranked that far from where I had Judge ranked coming into the year. I'm not saying he's Aaron Judge, but he's a very similar profile. Strikes out a little bit more probably than Judge did in the minors. He's not necessarily a power hitter, but he walks a lot, outcome guy, and he has that massive raw power, and he taps into it in games. So of this group, he's the highest for me. I even have him higher than Tyler O'Neill, though I know O'Neill runs. I really think that Stewart has a higher floor and a similar power upside. I think he'd be a lot like Chris Davis with a K. I think, you know, similar sort of a player.
I was thinking Matt Olson when you were talking.
Matt Olson, huh? All right. Maybe. Yeah, I guess he walks that much. I don't remember offhand. I thought Chris Davis walked a lot too, but maybe I'm mistaken on that. I can't remember what his stat line is off the top of the head right now. Moving along sort of that group, I had Chavez ranked around there too. He hasn't been great in the fall league, but I think the organization is committed to trying to make him a first baseman. But he's kind of small. I think he's only like 6 feet.
He's a bull, though. He's small
for a first baseman, man. If you want the guy to be able to...
Oh, defensively, yeah.
Yeah, I'm saying defensively. So I kind of question that. Bobby Bradley started to hit. He had a bad, I think, first week in the fall league. He's hit really well over the last
few games. Has he walked yet? I don't think he's walked.
He struck out a lot.
I think he's got 18 strikeouts and no walks.
But he's hitting for power. He's hitting the ball hard.
Yeah, he's hitting a couple homers, which is the opposite of what he was doing in Double A. But yeah,
really made some serious strides, especially against more advanced competition, just in terms of strikeout rate, the walk rate. You know, he got it down to a 22%. This is a guy that's known to walk at a 10% clip. That's not new. I mean, he's always had approach. It was just he also struck out a lot as well. He had it down to 22% this year. It's the fall league, man. He's tired. Whatever. He's hitting the baseball. That's really the only thing I care about in the fall league. I try not to dig too deep into the profile numbers and some of that stuff because the sample size is so small. But it's just nice against advanced competition to go there, do well. He's hit some homers. It's what Bradley's going to do. Once again, it's another guy in this environment, could come up. Batting average is never going to be great. But, you know, he can hit 240, 250, but also hit like, he's got 40 homer upside. I'm not crazy going out in the ceiling and say out in the ledge and saying that's what the ceiling is.
Yeah. All right. I want to watch the World Series, but let's
talk about Alvarez next week.
What's up?
Let's talk about Jordan Alvarez next week.
All right. I was going to close with Alex Verdugo, J.P. Crawford, Willy Adames, the nine huge power speed tool guys who are top 50 prospects. I guess maybe more safe than upside. I want to watch the World Series, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, man. I think J.P. Crawford, he's going to come up. He's going to hit relatively well. He's going to get on base. I mean, he may struggle his first year. But I don't want to take too much of a sample from what he did, in his call-up. He didn't play all that much. but he really turned it around the second half. Hit for power, tapped into that. I think that's how he's going to have to get by. He's not going to be a huge speed guy. I think he will get some opportunities early in his career, maybe to steal 10 bags wouldn't be crazy. But he's got to be able to tap into the power that he showed late in the season at Lehigh Valley. If he could be a 20 to 25 homer guy with a decent average and a really good on-base percentage, he could be a massive upgrade, especially at a middle infield spot or as a shortstop in like OPS leagues or on-base percentage slugging leagues. Adames of that group, I'm the lowest on. And Verdugo, I guess I'm the highest on technically. I just think he's a good all-around ball player. I think if you're buying Verdugo, you've got to be able to wade it through, because I think 2 or 3 years down the line, his major league career is when he'll really start to tap into that power. I think he's the ability to do it. Good athlete, just a really good ball player all around. So I want to watch the World Series too. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, Verdugo has raw power and he hits the ball really hard. So I think there is hope, even though you look at his numbers for fantasy and you're just like, eh. But I think there is hope for there to be real power in there with a good average. I agree with you. JP, 20 to 25 homer guy. He's more OBP league than average guy. So if you're in an OBP league, I'd give him a bump. Average league, it's going to be a lot of – you're going to be counting on those runs. And, all right. Let's get to AJ Puck and Mateo Ross on the docket. But, all right, I think we did pretty good here. Pretty good 20 through 50, just highlighting some guys that in that range that could pop. It's a strong top 50. It's a really strong – I think the rookie class coming in is going to be another really strong rookie class into the majors and just a good prospect list in general. All right, so that was 21 through 50 of the Razzball Prospect Podcast Top 100 shows. We're going to have one more next week, which is 51 through 100. You could follow me on Twitter, at Michael C. Halpern, at Imaginary Brick W. You could follow my ranking. I'm doing a dynasty ranking of just like young guys on my website, imaginarybrickwall.com. I'm through 34. I was hoping to get more stuff done earlier this week, but I wasn't able to. So that will continue. I'm having a lot of fun writing it. And where are you at, Ralph?
You can find me on Twitter, at Prospect Jesus. And I'm on Razzball a few times during the week, hanging out in Gray's commentary to talk baseball. Hit me up. I talk baseball all year round.
Thank you, RotoWare. Thank you to the fans.
Peace.
Thank you, Razzball. Peace. Later, Ralph.
Later.